Welcome back into the SC Wild Podcast. I'm Jared Rogers Martin, and I am joined by the voice of the DNR, Glenn Gardner. Glenn, how are you doing this week?
Doing fine, well, and good. And you, sir?
I am doing grand. Now, last time we were here, we were getting ready for the Sportsman Classic, which is the biggest hunting and fishing event that the Department of Natural Resources does. And now, hunting and fishing's done for the year, right? No more of that.
Hunting and fishing is done, at least for the Classic. Everybody came in. We had a really good weekend at the Sportsman's Classic this year, and everybody got geared up with their fishing needs, their hunting needs, all of their outdoor needs, and they're ready to tackle spring now.
I mean, we do this podcast to talk about the resources, and people have been using resources in South Carolina for thousands of years. So yes, we wanted to investigate who those first people were, a little bit about those stories. So that's why we brought in some archaeologists. They kind of know that stuff. We've got Sean Taylor and Meg Gilliard with us. We'll get to them in a second. But first, what's going on in South Carolina? You seem to be the man that knows all things Department of Natural Resources.
I don't know if I know all things. It's just one of those things that I've been there so long, it seems like everything that has happened at least once has made it onto my radar. But spring is just like it is. Spring for the DNR is just like it is for everybody else. You know, we've slowly started to come out of our winter stupor, although it doesn't really get that cold here for anything to hibernate. And quite frankly, it didn't get cold enough this last winter to do much of anything that felt like winter. But with spring and the birds coming back and the flowers blooming and all the stuff that you read in all the romance novels, we do have some hunting and fishing activities coming up with the DNR. First and foremost, turkey season. The spring turkey season has been going on for quite a while now. And on private lands and on wildlife management areas too, the turkey season will run through May 5th. Now, there are some variations according to the wildlife management areas that you may be interested in. So you'll need to go to our website, dnr.sc.gov, and check all those things out and make sure that all the regulations, rules and regulations for turkey season for your wildlife management area are in effect and holding forth through May the 5th. Now, if you're going to go out and hunt turkeys, or anything else, because small game season is also going on a lot this spring. But again, that's one of those things that depending on the wildlife that you are interested in, the seasons vary. So again, go to that DNR website, check out the small game season and the turkey season. And before you go out, let me circle back around now. We want to encourage you, if you have not already, to take advantage of some of the hunter education classes that are offered through the Department of Natural Resources. We've got a great crew scattered all over the state that offer hunting and education courses in different locations, and they're all in, you typically in the evenings or on the weekends. So if you've got the kids that need to go through, and if you've got, I'm not gonna say this for certain, but there is a cutoff date that if you were born prior to this or after this date, you need to take a hunter education class before you can get your license in South Carolina. So be sure again to visit the DNR website, and you can find out about those hunter education classes and also some boater education classes, because with warm weather comes all of the interest in going out on the lakes and rivers and ponds and whatever other water bodies might be attracting you. So we want you to be safe on the water, so we encourage you to take those boater education classes as well.
Well, that's water sports, and we're going to change gears just from a different elemental standpoint and go now towards the ground and talk to two archaeologists that we have with us in the room. We've got Meg Gilliard and we've got Sean Taylor, senior archaeologist with the DNR, to talk about just the first people in South Carolina and how long people have been using resources in the state. The DNR is here to protect resources, but what about those first people that were here? And I'm going to start off with Sean. How long have people been in South Carolina?
Definitively, we know people have been in South Carolina for 12,000 years. We've got archaeological sites. Just one of our properties, Congaree Creek Heritage Reserve, just across the river, has produced artifacts that date to those time periods. We think sites like the ones on Congaree Creek and are here because people could at those times easily cross the river. You know, the fall line that runs through Columbia and, you know, Augusta and other other cities were places where these kind of people would gather. They're hunter-gatherers. They're not agriculturalists. They have to utilize natural resources, and when they, you know, exhaust the resources in an area, they need to move on. But they also need to come together from time to time throughout the year to exchange information about where their, you know, other resources are that, that nobody may know about, or they need to exchange exchange DNA, bring some new DNA into their
That's a good euphemism, exchange DNA.
Yeah, you know, it's time for a new mother-in-law. So,
Meg, you work with the Heritage Trust Program.
We both do.
Oh, you both do.
Yeah.
What does that program do, and how is that important to South Carolina, or just keeping track of the history in South Carolina?
So the Heritage Trust Program was founded in 1974, first of its kind in the nation, but the vast majority of what we do and what the law states that we do is preserve and protect pieces of property that are irreplaceable. They're scientific laboratories. They preserve and protect both natural and cultural resources. So species that are endangered, fauna and plant life and animal life, as well as archaeological sites. So the Heritage Trust Program preserves and protects these properties with both natural and cultural importance to the state of South Carolina. And there are currently about 74 properties, about 88,000 acres across the whole state. And so that's our directive, is we preserve and protect these properties. And they range for the cultural side anywhere from the oldest bridge in the southeastern U.S., the oldest tabby fort in the southeastern U.S., to archaeological sites that we can't see because they are all underground. And then the natural side has a lot more properties, but for the cultural side, we have 17 that are designated cultural heritage preserve.
Archaeology in this case is extending past just Native Americans. How important is that to preserving the history of South Carolina and what you do?
So there's Fort Frederick down in Beaufort. It's the oldest tabby fort in the southeastern U.S., probably the oldest tabby fort in the U.S.
Probably, 1733.
Yeah.
You know, tabby is a oyster shell concrete.
So it's just been nominated into as part of a national monument for reconstruction. And its significance within the British context is very minimal. But 100 years later, it was used as the walkway for the first reading of the Emancipation Proclamation, which happened in Beaufort County. So it's an exceptionally important property, not only to the history of South Carolina, but to the history of the nation. So those types of things, looking at a fort, looking at a British fort, it simply means nothing unless you have the context of the history of that place. And sometimes it takes the archaeology, and sometimes it takes a mixture of the archaeology and the historic documents to extract that information from a place.
So yeah, these things are they're acquired and open to the public for the public to enjoy, and so that they can see and learn about. And what we try to do with the archaeology is get the public out there and involved in the excavation that we are doing when we're doing a public-oriented type of project. You know, it's great when you have the above-ground stuff like Fort Frederick. You can see it, you can touch it. And then as we put up the interpretive materials that tell the story, the Heritage Trust can acquire these things, these places, do some research on them, to tell the story.
Artifacts are just that. They're things. They're objects. Without context, they're just objects on your shelf. They mean nothing other than what it is, a button, a needle, a whatever. The context of where it's found, what it's found around, the depth it's found, that is the science behind those things. That is what allows archaeologists to tell the story of the humans that used it and why it was used, why it was made. Without the context of that object, we lose the history. We lose the prehistory. We lose the story of that human, that life, that wrapped around that object.
You know, after you, like I say, you do excavations for decades, you know, you wind up with a lot of boxes of stuff and that require constant care. When you start to think about it from that perspective, well, that's a cost to, it's a constant outlay of money. So it can become overwhelming after a while.
Well, it seems at the end of the day, it's the story that matters. And as we wrap up here, what's one of your favorite stories that you've developed just around archaeology?
We don't have any.
No, I can't share them.
Well, I meant just a story in general.
When you see little kids, it's, you know, Meg does our public interpretation. We always enjoy having little kids there to tell us things. So.
That's true. Yeah. So the one thing I tried to do with little kids, we had a third grade group out at Fort Frederick, and there were about 50 of them. And so I lined them up inside the fort where the British would have stood to be safe, supposedly be safe. This fort is 5 feet tall and 5 feet thick when it was originally built. Now with the river washing in, the ground has moved up a lot more. It's making it about the height of allowing a third grader to stand on the ground to have the same type of protection as a grown man would have had in the colonial era, essentially. And so what I did was I stood all the third graders behind the wall and I said, okay, the British government said in historic documents in the 1700s they did not feel safe here, that they thought it was a horrible fort. It was falling down. And it's amazing that now it's part of a national monument. But I said, guys, do you feel safe behind this fort? All of them, no, I don't feel safe. I'm like, neither did they. So it's that connection to the history, even if it's 300 years old, that allows it to come to life for even a third grader. And that's what the cool part of my job is, that, you know, you get to see that reaction in the field. You get to see that reaction not just when they're looking at an artifact, but when they're standing on the ground, standing behind the monument, the fort, and having that connection to the past.
But that's all we've got for this week in the SE Wild podcast. Keep tuned, and we'll continue to bring you more stories and narratives about South Carolina, hunting, fishing, conservation efforts all around South Carolina. I'm your host, Jared Rogers Martin, with the SE Wild podcast.